Good morning, little flock. I like the commentary during the prayer. It was sad that they were not here. People aren't here. I understood his sentiment. I trust that everyone had a good feast. You're back. You made it back alive. Looks like fairly healthy for the most part. You know, it doesn't happen every year, but certainly it does happen often this time of year. We go, we celebrate 8 days with brethren. We hear 16 messages or so. I mean, who knows how many messages. Depends on what you attend, but there's so many messages you hear, sermons and so forth. You enjoy physical nourishment, all the things we have during the feast. So we have spiritual prosperity, we have physical prosperity during that time. We get to spend time with friends daily, we're with our family every day, maybe family we don't see all the time. And then sometime shortly thereafter, on occasion, I've been known at least to experience a little bit of a slump. And over the years, I think it's kind of been termed, because I know I'm not the only one, but we all kind of have a post-feast blues or post-feast slump. If you've never experienced that, then kudos to you. I'm proud that you haven't. I have at times. I'm not this year. It's too early, of course. But I would say, I could venture to say that if you were trying to relate to what post-feast blues are, that throughout our spiritual journey, we all have highs and lows, don't we? We all have highs and we have lows, ups and downs. Those are things that we run into quite often. And it's sometimes difficult to maintain that fire and that zeal, especially coming off of a feast where we had, I mean, incredible messages. It's interesting to go to the feast. And, you know, you study the Bible. You're in the church your whole life, for many of us, and we've been in it. But someone will put a twist on something, and wow, your eyes are open. Your eyes are open. We never stop learning. And at the feast, we had a very, very inspired messages. It's interesting how many. I'll give you a little background. In Kelowna, I guess there's a lot of elders live in that area. So there were probably 15 to 20 elders in that small site that didn't even have the opportunity to speak. It was just a really rich area in terms of spiritual wisdom, and certainly certainly those who did have opportunity to speak were very inspired in their messages. So that's kind of hard to come back after that. We come back almost, it's like today. It's hard for me to actually put together a message for today because I'm like so excited about all of that. And do I come back and talk about the feast? Do I try to come up with something else that's not feast? And quite frankly, it's difficult for me to even come up with a topic. But anyway, we had that great meal, that great feast, and we were fed very, very well. All of those messages focus, obviously, on the future reign of Christ on this earth and the many blessings that will come as a result of that. I mean, that was the focus. I mean, every message, and it was just pounded at home to us. What an incredible time that will be. And during that period, you know, there was focus on what our role, because the feast isn't really necessarily about us. As we look at that millennial setting, those physical blessings that they will enjoy aren't really about us. But we do have an incredible blessing that is also part of that. So during the feast, we focused on that. And there was so much meat in the messages that we heard. Of course, on the eighth day, we heard what really, quite frankly, is the most, I would say, one of the most fundamental understandings that we hold dear as the church, and yet probably one of the least understood aspects of God's plan that there is. The fact that all humanity has opportunity to be part of God's family. And they will be raised again to life. And again, we heard what our role would be in that. What role we would have in that. Roles of service. Our role, what we prepare for when we go to the feast, what we prepare for every day when we come in here, every Sabbath, is one of service. We are preparing to serve. And during the feast, we learn about what that service will look like. There was a gentleman from Australia who gave a really good message on a topic that I think many of us have probably questioned in our mind at times. And many of us have probably heard messages on it. But he talked about priests, what it is to be a priest. And most of us, as he mentioned, and I thought was really fascinating, he said, what do you think of when you think of priest? What do you think of when you think, oh, I'm going to be a priest? Most of us are like, ah. And I like the way he put it in his Australian slang and accent. It's like, you know, I don't want any part of that. You know, he did not want any part of being your traditional idea of what a priest is. You're in the temple sacrificing and serving in that capacity. But he pointed out, and I would recommend actually going and listening to that sermon, but he pointed out all the incredible roles that a priest served in the community. How serving in the temple was just one of a minor role that they had where they worked. But they had hands-on physical jobs working with the people in the community on a one-on-one administrative, educational, advisory role. So priests were intimately involved in the function of society at that time and will be in the future. And he did a really incredible job of pointing out how we will be actively involved with every, you know, the people during the millennium and even into the second resurrection, the personal role that we will have as advisors. And serving as a priest is an incredible act of service. It is an incredible job of service. As you might know, what I'm talking about this morning is service. It's service and how service can help us if we have a tendency toward ever experiencing post-feast blues or a letdown after the feast. What I want to encourage us to do today is look at how we can combat that through service and look at what God and what the Scriptures have to say about serving humanity and serve at this time and serving, of course, our brethren. Are we ready for the roles that God has called us to, that we heard about all during the feast, those roles in the millennium? Are we ready for those right now? If you were to probably answer in your own mind, mine's a resounding no. No, I'm not ready. I'm not ready for that role now. Will we be ready when the time comes? And I could say, based on the confidence that we have in what we understand, the confidence that we have in Jesus Christ as our leader, as our servant leader example, then I would say yes. God will finish His work, but He has a lot of work to do. Will we be ready at that time? And I think resoundingly, we have to answer confidently. If we do not, then we have to reconsider why we're here. But today is the time of training, isn't it? Each week we show up here, we are preparing for those future roles. And that feast is just a condensed preparation. Each year, you know, why do we go to the feast? Well, it's like an MBA program in 1 week. We get a huge amount of information that we have to digest. And if your messages were as strong as the ones that we got to hear, I mean, every day was a learning experience. And hopefully an experience that I will apply in my life throughout the year. And we do that each week as we come here. We are preparing to learn to serve. And not only that, we get the opportunity, even as we sit here, to serve each other. So we must see our lives today as training opportunities. and our training opportunities. We're not going to coast into the kingdom. There will be no just coasting in and hanging out by the pond and fishing. Or, you know, everyone has work to do. And there are no automatic passes. And I think the bigger thing is God doesn't need us the way we are right now. He needs us to change. The way we make change is we serve, and we that helps us to grow. Through service, we grow. So we are called to serve, both now and in the future. Wherever God places us in this kingdom and whatever role He gives us, it will be one of service. It will be one of service. And God is working with us right now to develop us for that role. So I don't have a lot of scriptures for today, but I would like to start in Romans 12, verse 1. And as we go through this morning's message, I would like for you to just put a bookmark at Romans 12, because we're going to refer back and forth to Romans 12, verse 1, and we're going to actually read the entire chapter before it's over of Romans 12. Romans 12 is written on the heels of what basically explains the last day. If you look at Romans 11, Romans 11 explains that those who basically forsook their calling and lost it didn't lose it forever. Those who were essentially Israel will have an opportunity in the future to be part of God's family. They will be included. And it basically, as you go through, describes the plan of God. And also explains really what we celebrated on the eighth day, or at least a good portion of it. But on the heels of that comes Romans 12. And in verse 1, it's written, "I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice." Saying, knowing what we just went through, "Now I beseech you to present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service." Which is your reasonable service. "And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by renewing your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." We'll stop right there, and that's going to bring up my first point this morning. And my first point being, God expects nothing less than complete surrender. God expects nothing less from us but complete surrender. A living sacrifice is a complete surrender. And that's what God is asking for. He wants us to dedicate, complete our bodies, our minds, who we are completely to Him. And as a servant, as a sacrifice. Let's look. We're going to turn now to Luke 7, if you would. Luke 17, I'm sorry. To build on this topic, we're going to turn to Luke 17, and we'll be there a little bit. How do we surrender ourselves completely to God? It takes a lot of faith to surrender your life, right? To give your life over completely, to make your number one thing in your life number one, takes a whole lot of faith in what you believe. It takes a whole lot of faith. And it's interesting in Luke 17, verse 5, as the disciples were with Christ, this set of scripture seems to be out of context. It's almost like an inset, but it's not an inset because it just seems kind of odd, quite honestly. Starting in verse 5 of Luke 17, And the apostle said to the Lord, increase our faith. Increase our faith. So the Lord said, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you can say this to the mulberry tree. Be pulled up by the roots and be planted in the sea, and it would obey you. And which of you, having a servant, plowing or tending sheep, will say to him when he has come in from the field, come at once and sit down to eat? And right now I'd be like, where's he going with that? Verse 8, but he will not rather say to him, prepare something for my supper and gird yourself and serve me till I have eaten and drunk. And afterward you will eat and drink. Verse 9, does he thank that servant because he did the things that were commanded him? I think not. In verse 10, so likewise you, when you have done all those things which you are commanded, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done what was our duty to do. Now, at this point, I would expect one of those inserts where the Bible would explain. Now Christ took his to the side and explained the parable. Because that's almost what you need here. You almost expect him to say, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, if I'm one of the elect, okay, what did he mean by that? We ask about faith, and he told us to gird ourselves up and keep working. But there's no explanation, because it's all quite simple, honestly. But it's not simple when I first read it. I really think, wow, it would have been nice if Christ, this is one of those parables that he would have explained in a little more detail. But I think as we understand the Bible in context, the overarching theme of the Scripture, we know the answers. We can derive the answers out of what he says here. And it all comes back to service, right? Everything comes back to work and service. So, in his response to his disciples, what Christ is explaining is that faith is built through diligent service or diligent fulfillment of our obligation. That's how we build faith. And through that faith, we can grow and we will serve. Several points that I'd like to bring out on this particular passage. And this is all under our main point of God expects complete surrender from us. Faith and works are inseparable by nature. Faith and works are inseparable by nature. To tirelessly serve someone without instant reward, because there was no reward, he was saying, no, it's not time for you yet. You need to keep working. You need to serve me. To tirelessly serve without instant reward requires and develops faith. For us to continue. So in the Bible, if you read through, particularly through the epistles, there's this constant reminder of perseverance. There's this constant reminder that we must endure, that we must persevere. And that is how we build faith. It's through persevering through work. It's through tirelessly serving. If you need a set of reference scriptures on this point that faith and works are inseparable, you can look at James 2. Verse 14 through 17. I'm not going to turn there for lack of time. I'll just point that out. And I know most of you are familiar with that. James 2, verse 14 through 17. Another point regarding service and our duty or obligation to serve, taken from this passage, would be our reward is not immediate. Our reward is not immediate. If we complete a task, we have no reason to rest. And that was pointed out. Just because you've done and completed those things that are your normal duty, it does not give you opportunity to rest or relax or even gloat in what you got accomplished or what we got accomplished. We must immediately move on to another task. I mean, it requires perseverance. To continue to serve, again, requires endurance. It requires perseverance. But that is what is asked of us. That's what's pointed out in this parable. And in doing so, we develop faith. Another point is our whole and complete duty is selfless service to our Lord and Master. And again, as brought out here in the parable from Christ Himself, we are bound by the first and great commandment. What are the two great commandments? Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and then your neighbor. But our first duty, our first commandment, is to serve our Master first and foremost. Above every other duty, above everything else we do. Because we have been purchased. We are slaves to our Master. We've been redeemed for that work. And that is the work that we're called to do. And that is our obligation. But in completing that obligation is how we build faith. And that's the point that Christ was trying to get across to His disciples. It's through enduring the obligations of service, what we signed up for at baptism, that is how we build faith. And that's what kind of service that we are called to. Verse 8 is interesting. Back up in Luke 17:8. It says, "Gird yourself and serve me till I have eaten and drunk." Gird yourself. And, you know, to gird yourself is to make yourself ready, right? When someone girds himself, he basically removes any other hindrance, any other encumbrance from them so that they are fully ready to the task at hand. And that is where we have challenges, isn't it? How do we put off all the other things so that this becomes our number one focus? That's very difficult. Since I've been home, my number one focus has been catch up, you know. But that's not what we're told, right? Our number one focus is to serve our Master. And that's what it should be. So when we think in our minds of girding ourselves, it's how do we at least reduce the other hindrances in our life so that we can focus on serving. If we can find a way to do that, then we will stay engaged. We will stay zealous. We won't have post-feast letdown. If we can find ways to stay in a serving mind to our Master. Another point under this parable, we do not live to do our own will, but the will of Christ. We do not live to do our own will, but the will of Christ. Now, the first scripture we read was Romans 1 and 2, or 12, chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. And what was verse 2? The latter part of verse 2. That you may prove what is that good and acceptable, perfect will of God. We live to fulfill the will of God or the will of Christ. Another point under this parable, we will eventually receive our reward. The servant in the parable eventually did get to sit and eat. They eventually received their reward, but only after their work was done. Only after their work was done. We too will eventually receive our reward. If you would, look at Matthew 25. Matthew 25 and verse 33. And we know this as the parable of the sheep and the goats. And I'm guessing maybe I'm looking at the wrong one. 25. Yes. Matthew 25, verse 33. And again, we're looking at the point that we will eventually receive our reward. Verse 33, and he will set the sheep on his right hand and the goats on his left hand. I'm guessing, possibly, that you probably already read these scriptures at the feast just a week ago. I think they were read where we were. Then the king will say to those on his right hand, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. And then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? Or when did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, among ourselves, you did it to me. So we see that throughout the scripture, and this is not the only place a similar thing is said or taught, service to others, service to the brethren, is the same as service to God. It's the same as service to Jesus Christ. If we do good things to each other, if we are serving each other and loving each other and taking care of each other as we should, it is the same as serving the Master. So all of those things, by the same token, take precedent over anything else in our life. We need to gird ourselves for service to each other. And a lot of times, because we live in such an affluent world, it's hard for us to even see opportunities for service. But the opportunities are there. Maybe they're not the brethren here, but there's brethren in other places. And we'll see here shortly that there are so many different ways to serve beyond the things that we automatically think of. But we will eventually receive our reward if we are diligent to serve our Master. And one of the ways we do that is through serving each other, serving the brethren. And I'm sure it extends even beyond that. We know it extends to the world as well. Another point under this subheading, you might say, is that our reward is not to be expected as a matter of merit, but is given at Christ's own pleasure. And you notice he says, where was it in Luke, that we are unprofitable servants. If all we do is what we are required to do, we're unprofitable servants. We're just doing what we're supposed to do as slaves, as indentured servants. So there's no merit in our service. It doesn't earn us anything. We don't get special privilege because we do something good, but we do it because it's our obligation to do it. Let's look at. You don't have to turn there, but I will give you. Job 22, verse 2 through 3. And actually, I want to read this from my notes from the Bible in Basic English. And this is when Eliphaz the Temanite was questioning Job in Job 22, verse 2 through 3. And he says, is it possible for a man to profit, to be a prophet to God? Is it possible for a man to be a prophet to God? He says, no, for a man's wisdom is only a prophet to himself. And verse 3 says, is it of any interest to the ruler of all things that you are upright? Or is it of use to him that your ways are without sin? See, God doesn't need us necessarily. You know, none of our good works gain us any merit or any favor with God. Or, you know, without God, we're still an incomplete. But God without us is still perfect. We don't enhance Him in any way by our service. It's just part of our obligation and duty to Him. And it is something that He requires of us. Back where we started in Romans 12, verse 3. I find it interesting. Romans 12, verse 3 says, "For I say, through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think." And again, this comes on the heels, I'll remind you, it comes on the heels of the explanation of, you know, he's talking to Gentiles, but he was explaining, you Gentiles, don't get all haughty because you're part of the first fruits, you're part of the family of God. Those Jews will be part of the family of God too. There's no reason for you to have some great haughty attitude about this. Don't think of yourself more highly than you ought to think. They're God's children as well. But to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. So our reward is not to be expected as a matter of merit. All right, back. We'll go all the way back now to where we started. I know this is confusing. Romans 12. Back to Romans 12. I know often, again, I mentioned earlier, we live in such an affluent society. Sometimes I think we don't really know. It's hard to even see where service opportunities are. I think one of the big things that corporations do, you know, they look for charities that they can get involved with. They look for places, and it's actually very difficult to look for places where you can physically go get involved. Sometimes that's where the most reward is when you can physically get involved with helping somebody. I think a lot of us feel at times that, well, I can give money. Because that's the easiest thing to do. There's always a need for money, right? But it seems like it's hard to find opportunities to serve, to be involved, to engage yourself with people in a serving way. But my only other point on this topic, other than the first point, that we are to be complete living sacrifices, is that, yes, we all have the ability to serve God. It is our obligation, and yes, He gives us the ability. We all have the ability. There are many ways that we can do it. And I want to go back again to Romans 12, and we'll pick up in verse 4. Of Romans 12. It says, "For we have many members in one body, but all the members do not have the same function." And that's very clear here, right? We have some members take care of one thing, some members take care of another thing. All of those things are service. They may not feel like that much, but they're all ways that we serve. Most of the opportunities we have to serve, they don't have titles. They don't really have, you know, there's no one that said, "Here's your job, go do it." They're voluntary roles. Service comes in the form of a voluntary role. It comes in your own personal example, your own personal stories, your conversation, you know, your kindness. And we'll see that as well. So we don't all have the same function. We all, though, have opportunities. So we, being many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. In verse 6, having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. Our gifts are all different. Some people have a gift for compassion. Some people are very gifted as teachers. Some people are very gifted as listeners. Being a gifted listener is one of the greatest gifts that there can be. Have you ever met the person whom you can't talk to? It's like, maybe walk away because they don't know how to listen. And I feel that I'm that way sometimes. I just don't hear everything that's said to me. So having gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. Now, he's going to talk a little bit more about spiritual gifts, but this could include a lot of different types of gifts. If prophecy, let us prophesy in proportion to our faith. And that's a sermon all in itself, the gift of prophecy. Because it does apply to us in this time, it's just not applied the same way. If ministry, let us use it in ministering. And ministry can mean a lot of things, right? Taking care of other people. If you have a compassionate person, minister. He who teaches in teaching, verse 8, he who exhorts in exhortation. All of us right now, think of someone in your mind who is good at exhorting. I know you know someone. I could probably think of a half dozen if I put my mind to it, but I definitely know of a few. That's a gift, but it's not a gift that's assigned, right? Our pastor is not going to go around and say, okay, now, Mr. So-and-so, I want you to become exhorter number one, and I want you to get 4 other guys and teach them to be exhorters. That's not what we do. But being someone who exhorts is a critical part of a healthy church. It's a very critical part. And we owe that to each other. If you have that gift, use that gift. Don't be shy of that gift. He who gives with liberality. If you happen to be in a position where you can give either of yourself in terms of time, or you can give financially, do it liberally because you can't outgive God. There is nothing you can do. God asks us to test Him on those things. So if that is our gift, we have a gift of giving and something we enjoy, do it. Do it liberally and you'll be repaid for it. He who leads, lead with diligence. There's another one. Not all leaders are given titles. Not all leaders are given roles. You'll hear most pastors, if you question them and talk to them, they will tell you the strength of the congregation lies within some of the widows. That they're the greatest and strongest leaders in a church are the widows. And we've experienced that here in this congregation. Some of our strongest leaders have been widows. Some of the older members are the leadership. That's where the strength, everyone looks to that. Great leadership. If you have leadership skills, use it. Reach out. If you're an older person, try to reach out to the children. And I know most of you here do. The children in this world need leadership. And the unfortunate thing is sometimes they don't want to listen to their parents. So perhaps they'll listen to you. But if you're a leader, talk to the kids. Talk to the young people. Don't hold back that gift. If you have that skill, use it. He who shows mercy, do it with cheerfulness. Let's just face it. Some of us aren't as merciful as others. But if we're going to become like Christ, we have to become really, really merciful, don't we? So I think we all need to practice that one. But there are people that you know are much more merciful than others. But the interesting part is it's with cheerfulness. And that's something everybody can serve with cheerfulness, can't they? Everyone can be cheerful. Everyone can have a happy face. Put on a smile. Do whatever you want to do. Call it what you want. But don't come to church grumpy. That's hard sometimes too, isn't it? But be cheerful. Let love be without hypocrisy. Verse 9, abhor what is evil. Part of that's leadership, I think. To be able to stand up against what is wrong. Be firm in what you believe. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love. Kindly affectionate. There's nothing more warming than an affectionate person. At the feast, it's funny how things will pop into your mind, but at the feast, someone had asked us, we were having breakfast with a couple, and they said, well, what was your favorite feast and why? I think it was at breakfast. Anyway, feast site and why. And it's funny, the one that will pop in your head, you don't think about. Guatemala was one of my favorite feast sites. And it was not for the reason that anyone would ever really necessarily guess, but there's not a more affectionate group of people on this planet than those brethren from Guatemala. They are just warm and affectionate. You walk in the church, you're going to get hugs and you're going to get kisses. Be prepared. They don't have to know you. You're getting kisses. That's not our nature, is it? But affection is something that we can all work on. We can all work to become, to serve each other kindly and affectionately. I mean, this is your family, folks. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor, giving preference to one another, or esteem one another better than yourselves. Verse 11. We're still on this topic or this subject, this point. We all have the ability to serve. We all have the ability to serve. Verse 11. Not lagging in diligence, fervent in the Spirit, serving the Lord. This whole passage really is about that. And this comes back to the zeal thing. After the feast, how do you maintain that zeal? Not lagging in diligence, fervent in the Spirit, serving the Lord. Serving builds zeal and enthusiasm. If we serve each other, we'll be enthusiastic about what is going on here. If we serve the community, we'll be enthusiastic about what God is doing in His plan, His entire plan for humanity. But it all comes down to serving. Verse 12, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer, distributing to the needs of the saints, given in hospitality. Again, distributing. If you have the ability to give, then help where you can help. And this is where, quite frankly, we fall down. I fall down. I mean, we know we fall down horribly. Hospitality. We need to be hospitable. We need to know the people that we call brothers and sisters. We need to know each other. Given to hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Is that a way of giving? Is that a way of serving? I think it is. Bless and do not curse. In verse 15, rejoice with those who rejoice. Again, that comes back to that empathy or that compassion. That's a part of serving too. If people are happy, be happy for them. If people are happy, be happy with them. That's rejoicing with those who rejoice. And weep with those who weep. When we have trials and we have difficulties and we have struggles, again, coming back to those who are compassionate, allow that compassion to serve your brethren. Weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion. Pay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, As much as it depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Skipping down to verse 20. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him drink, for in doing so you will heap coals of fire on his head. And that's not a punishment. That's actually a blessing, if you go and read what that means. But again, it comes back to serving, doesn't it? That's how Christ will divide the sheep from the goats, essentially. Those who serve and those who don't. Those who have dedicated and given their life completely to the sacrifice that they committed to at baptism. So we too, brethren, we have an opportunity. This each week we come here, you know, after the feast, it is easy to kind of feel a little let down. It's exciting. It's so exciting. They're great days, but they go so quickly, and then we have this long drought before we have another Holy Day season. But we have it. We have the opportunity every week to be encouraged. We have the opportunity every week to serve. We have the opportunity every week to inspire and to be inspired. And so let's take that opportunity. Let's recognize our obligation and let's serve.